everybody, and welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing, presented by PPV.com, Uncrowned, and Yahoo Sports. I'm Dan Canobio. He is the champ, Chris Algieri. It is Zayas Boots Fight Week, which means we are a few days away from our pre-fight party, McMahon's Public House, 5 p.m. It's going to be a grand old time. I'll be there. Chris will be there. Avril Mathy will be there. And some more special guests. $20 to get in. Short walk to Barclays Center. If you've been to our past pre-fight parties, you know what to expect. If you haven't been, what you can expect is a grand old time. The best boxing community coming together, having drinks, talking, eating, shaking Chris Algieri's hand. You can't beat that type of entertainment in Brooklyn, New York on Saturday. I'm excited, Chris. I'm excited for the party.
Yeah, I'm excited for the energy of Fight Week and being right there, so close to ground zero where the fight is. That's what makes these things so special. We always suss out the areas and get bars and places that are very, very close to the venue. So people who are in the area can just pop in, pop through, but also the energy and the vibe is there. So I'm really looking forward to that. I haven't been in New York in a while, so that's another thing I'm excited to get down there. It's so hot down here, dude. I need a little bit of a break.
New York, talk about hot. New York is
hot up there
right
too?
Now. No, hot and like nothing.
Oh, hot like in
temperature.
The vibes.
Are off the charts, man. New York is experiencing a revival, a renaissance, because we were down sports wise. We were down. COVID kicked New York's ass. Weather, you know, for the last couple of summers, it rained every weekend. Beautiful sunny skies this past weekend. I survived the Knicks parade, which was unreal. That was insane. Went to the Yankee game on Friday at Legend Seats, saw nice. Kid Chocolate Peter Quillin throughout the first pitch.
That's awesome.
I mean,
that's
come awesome. On. What's going on in this city? Jet skis.
New York is up. Back. New York is up, baby.
And then we have a big World Cup is going on. There's a Canobio on Uruguay who scored.
Didn't you bet on that too?
I bet on FanDuel. I put $10 on Augustin Canobio to score. And we're just having
just
fun.
For the namesake. You're like, you know what? This guy will score.
Yes. The whole Canobio clan was at my parents' house for Father's Day. We're laughing that there's a Canobio. Not a common name at all. There's a lot of Canobios in the soccer world. There's not a lot of Canobios in the U.S. There's like maybe, I think there's like a pocket of them in like L.A. Not related. And then there's a bunch in Europe. And then I knew that there's a bunch on like the Italian team, but didn't know there was any on the Uruguay team. So I see this Canobio.
Uruguay and Argentina are just European mutts basically down there.
Yeah, he probably is Italian, right? Isn't that allowed? Yeah. Mm-hmm. $10 on FanDuel for Canobio to score. Guy scores. The whole house erupts.
What were the odds?
+220.
Okay.
He's a striker. This guy scored. He's a striker. Yeah, he's their best. Yeah, he's their best.
He wouldn't have been on there if he wasn't, you know, a striker.
And Argentina's doing pretty well, huh? Messi with the hat trick.
I mean, Lionel Messi is the best player who's ever lived. He's literally that guy. When you ask other players who's the best, they're all like, oh no, it's Messi. Like I saw an interview with Mbappe from the French team, who's amazing, who is absolutely out of control good, and is probably going to surpass Messi at some point because he's so damn young. But they asked him, he's like, no, Messi. He's like, Messi's the best player. He's like, yeah, the discussion is for everyone else. He's like, but no, it's
Messi. Isn't he like 40 or 39?
He's 38. He's 38.
Oh, gracious. Doing it for the olds.
Yeah, and but you know what it is? He got the title last time in 22, and that was like the only thing he hadn't accomplished. So now that he's got it, he's just playing like with ease. He's playing free and fun, and it's just fluid. And it's just like he scored. He doesn't even celebrate. He's like, I'm that good. I know.
With the World Cup here, there's a lot of attention on different countries, and U.S. is actually playing pretty well. I think we've already advanced out of the knockout stage, which, you know, this is not a soccer country, not a football country. I've asked Terrence Crawford this. Chris, if you were building your U.S. boxing dream team, four weight classes, 135, 147, middleweight, heavyweight, who are you drafting at 135?
Is this all time?
All time.
135, Sweet Pea. I'm going Pernell Whitaker.
Really?
Yeah.
Over Pretty Boy Floyd?
I don't think any. I mean, that version of Sweet Pea in his prime at 135. Yeah, Floyd at 35. Floyd was, I think, Floyd at 30. If you had a 30, I would probably pick Floyd.
I'm going with the prestige weight class.
Actually, you know what? You know what? No, I'm going. Oh, we're American Fighters. I was gonna say Duran, but no, we're going American Fighters. So, yeah, I'm going Pernell.
Okay, 147 welterweight. A lot to choose from.
Sugar Ray Leonard. Going Leonard. I mean, just offensive machine, has that dog in him. And if we're talking all time, we're talking 15 rounders. And Sugar was the king of 15 rounders, man.
He
late charges. And that's the only reason I would pick him over Floyd. Floyd at 12 is almost unbeatable, especially at welterweight. But if we're talking all time, we're going 15 rounders, and that therefore I'm going Leonard.
The argument with Floyd, because I know people will come at you, because I will clip this, and I will put this on socials, and people will come at you. Because I don't think 147 Floyd is even the best version of Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. I mean, that's what I mean. Like what I was saying, at 30, when he was still knocking guys out, the guy who beat Genaro Hernandez, the guy who beat Diego Corrales, that Floyd, oof, that's a whole different Floyd. 47, he was undersized. He was undersized. Yeah. You know, that money version of Floyd. And don't get me wrong, his skills were incredible and sublime. And the way he was able to disarm guys, and especially guys who are bigger than him, is unbelievable. But if we're taking a dream team, man, I'm going Leonard.
Middleweight, I think I know the answer.
Oz Hagler, all day, all day. Mean, fights from both sides, 15-round guy, absolutely Hagler.
And then heavyweight. No, light heavyweight. So it's fine.
Light heavyweight.
Light heavyweight.
Roy Jones, baby. Roy Jones Jr. American, light heavyweight. In his prime, at light heavyweight, Roy Jones.
Yeah, there's no one that... I mean, even though his best years were probably at 168, but just to get... Roy has to be on this team somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So represent 175. And then heavyweight?
American heavyweight. Jeez.
Oh, wow. I thought this would be an easy one.
American heavyweight. I mean, we're going all time, right? Oh, so Ali. I was thinking like recent for some reason. I was like Mike? Nah, Ali.
Ali, Tyson, Riddick Bowe, Holyfield, Holmes, Sonny Liston, Jack Johnson.
Now think about all these personalities on the same team. That's going to be an issue.
Who's coaching this team? Emmanuel Stewart?
It's got to be Stewart. Got to be Manny.
Sweet.
Because Emmanuel Stewart was rough and mean. You would need a coach that would be able to keep these guys in check, because they're, Hagler, Ali.
I mean, Hagler can probably coach the team. He'd be a player coach.
Yeah, he'd be like the Messi guy who everyone looked up to as the.
Oh man, that'd be so cool to think of
older like, grizzled guy.
The dream team in basketball had like Coach K, but they also had like Popovich, who was the Spurs coach at the time, and they had like Lenny Wilkins, and they had like the stud coaching staff, like the best coaches ever. So like a dream team coaching staff would be like Emmanuel Stewart, Freddie Roach,
Eddie Futch,
then current day like Robert Garcia. Wow, that's pretty damn cool to think about. World Cup fever. Speaking of historic stuff, I wanted to thank everyone for all the great messages we got last week for the episode with my dad, Bob Canobia. That was really fun. Overwhelming amount of positive messages, which is very rare in the boxing YouTube space and on social media. Bob is a guy that doesn't really like to do a lot of interviews. He's not a front-facing type of guy, but man, does that guy have stories. You know, being at Hagler Hearns and him, I've heard the stories a million times as a kid, but when he was like retelling them and I was like actually thinking, imagine being at Hagler Hearns. Like, I couldn't even imagine what the casino was like after and like the arena.
Yeah. I mean, your dad, yeah, he's a behind the scenes guy, but you know, he's, you get him going and he brightens up. And
he
it's
was
funny.
Going.
Yeah. You mentioned how like, surprisingly good feedback, because normally when we do anybody else besides us, the listeners are not as in tune. They really aren't. So that's cool that Bob got crossover appeal.
Bob's the man. Shout out Bob. Thank you. We'll have to have him on again. All right, let's get into the news. Kind of a little bit of a slow week before we headed to Boots and Zayas week. There was some interesting stuff to come out of the Turkey world. Turkey Alışık took to social media to announce that he wants to broker a peace summit between Eddie Hearn, Dana White, and other promoters, and DAZN. This is all surrounding the Fury-AJ fight, which is yet to be formally announced. There is no venue. There is no promoter. There is no broadcaster. And also just like in terms of all the infighting that's happening and all the confusion that's going on with Zuffa and the old guard, the new guard, Turkey is saying that only I can do this. He says he wants to make a revolution in boxing and see white smoke rise from the chimney. He also went on to say that he hopes it happens sooner than later because he's pretty much suffering from memory loss, which I'm pretty sure he's alluding to some health concerns that he has. There is a rumor out there, and Ryan Garcia pretty much confirmed it with his own tweet following this. Turkey is suffering from a brain tumor. And if you're in the boxing community, you've heard that for a while now. And this is the first time Turkey's actually somewhat alluded to it. Said he can't even remember his name some days, or in a few years, he won't be able to remember his name. A lot to unpack there, Chris. So, wherever you want to go with that, let me know.
I'll start with the health concerns first. That's been a rumor for a couple of years now, and it was always alluded to being something wrong with the brain, like a brain tumor or brain cancer or something at that level. Like, we didn't give it much, you know, credence because he had never acknowledged it. He never went – again, it's just hearsay, and he's the kind of guy who's come in from, you know, the outside, and it seems to be, you know, whether they deserve it or not, a little bit of a shadowy figure in terms of, you know, what we know about him. So we're just like, it's one of those things. Like, you always hear kind of crazy stuff about certain guys, like Al Haymon. Like, you know, we heard the same kind of things with him. But now, I mean, now that he's acknowledging, he's actually bringing it out there. Cat's out of the bag. Mm-hmm. It obviously something is up. And is that what has been pushing him to be so dogged and aggressive and bullish on getting some of these fights together, so, you know, he can see them before he can't remember them? Also, this whole discussion about brokering a summit to bring all the families together, you know, the boxing crime families to come together and make peace. If that's the case, I mean, it's a pretty cool altruistic thing to do in the way out. If that is what we're case, but again, we don't really know. We don't know what's all going on, and what kind of peace can there actually be, in boxing? I don't.
None.
Now they'll work together, but they'll work together no matter what. As long as there's enough money involved, people work together. But yeah, I don't know how much peace we're really gonna discover, even if we do have this summit amongst these very ego driven heads of state.
I think Dana White already shot down the summit.
Yeah,
I forgot the exact quote. But he was pretty much just like, yeah, that's not happening. I mean, him and Eddie Hearn hate each other. I mean,
yeah.
Dana White has the biggest ego of them all, I think. And this is a room full of egos.
Dana and Oscar and Eddie. I mean, nobody.
I would pay top dollar to watch this peace summit. Top dollar. Stream this on DAZN. Put this in the ultimate plan.
I think Oscar would be on one, man. That would be he would be great to watch.
I can't stand all the like Twitter stuff and the promoters fighting, and now we're seeing another round of Shakur and Haney, and Gervonta Davis reactivates his social media, and Ryan Garcia is getting in the mix, and like, this is all going down yesterday. I was just like rolling my eyes at it, not even trying to pay attention, not even putting it in our notes, like. Don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Like either fight or not. Like I would actually pay to watch a sit down with these promoters because I just think it's so damn interesting. Because there's such big names, there's such big egos. It's a big part of what's going on in boxing. Quite arguably the biggest story in boxing over the last 2 years. Obviously the fights, we want to see the best fights, and there have been some great fights, but it's the shifting of the business. The whole structure of the sport is changing. Whether it's the Ali Act, whether it's Turkey. Whether it's the old guard versus the new guard or the Zuffa. I don't think we're going to get this summit. I just think it's like a, you know, Turkey kind of flexing his muscles and trying to, you know, be that guy to bring everyone together. And first off, too, like, you know, if he I don't know the extent of his sickness, but we don't wish any ill will on anyone. You know, we've let our voices be known on what we think about everything in the sport, whether it's Zuffa, Saudi, and all that, but for sure want him to get the best help he can and stick around because he's done more good than bad in terms of making the best fights possible. But like this is all around the Fury AJ fight, which I find hilarious because this isn't, once again, like I said last week, this isn't a Fury versus Usyk. You know, this isn't a Floyd versus Pacquiao a la 2010 or 2015. This is a spectacle type of fight, a and they still can't figure out where they want it to be. They still can't figure out who's promoting it. Chris, there was a report last week from The Athletic that there's a very good chance that AJ and Fury ends up in the United States. That's a slap in the face to British fans.
Yeah, that fight needs to be in Wembley. But if it does happen in the States, I mean, it'd be easier for us to get to it, which would be cool. If we're going to be
like, yeah, I'll be there, but like, maybe not. But like, yeah, but that's, come on. That's a Wembley fight.
Well, do you see that other weird statement by Turkey where he was saying, like, I haven't decided yet where it's going to be? You know, people are saying what it is, but, you know, they're wrong. If you haven't heard from me, it's not real. I don't know. What would be the issue with why? It's a no-brainer.
Is that they aren't going to do it till December, right? Because they're doing these ridiculous tune-ups. Don't understand why it can't be September. Yeah. So December weather issues. And, you know, they've done fights outside. I think Fury fought Chisora in December, and it was pretty cold. So that could be it. That's one aspect. I really think the Netflix part, and yeah, there's just rumors that Netflix is the broadcaster, but it's pretty strong rumors. So if Netflix the broadcaster, they could be pushing for a U.S., you know, 8 p.m. primetime start.
But also, if Netflix is involved, that means Eddie and Frank Warren, Queensberry and Matchroom, are out. Because they have an exclusive with DAZN, so,
and that's right from Frank Warren's mouth.
Yeah, right from Frank. And Frank don't mince words. Yeah, that's probably it right there. So it comes down to a business thing, promoter thing. Again, things that fans don't really care about, but deals are deals, and promoters, this is how they make their money. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
Man,
where would you do it in the States?
Vegas.
Like Vegas here, like
I don't know. I think T-Mobile's fine. Like if it's at that point, it's just like,
is that big enough though? I mean,
it's not. It's big enough because it's not a big fight here. It's yeah, a big it's fight a in the UK. This is 90,000 easy. In the US, with the amount of things so that are going money on here,
you're leaving so much money on the table with the gate over there.
That's well, crazy. That's another thing too. It's like the people are trying to compare like 90,000 with like a smaller ticket, like. Cheaper ticket prices for the 90,000 compared to 20,000 jacked up prices. But there's not
but
as much of a demand.
That's the issue with boxing. That's the issue with boxing in general, though. It's too expensive to be a fan. I'd rather a bigger arena with less pricey seats.
Well, there's a lot of things here too. It's like I put out a video on Friday when I heard of this report. It's just like flabbergasted, but kind of not because. It's a power move. I feel like Turkey and Dana are just saying, look what we can do. Like, this doesn't make sense. Like, this fight belongs in Wembley. But yeah. We can put it in Vegas, and we can just flip the bird to you, Eddie Hearn, and Frank Warren. The fight that has 100% belongs at a UK, most notably Wembley. But on the flip side of things, I have people in my mentions saying, well, Eddie and Frank had 10 years to make this fight, and they failed. So now it's in the hands of someone that is going to make it happen, therefore they can choose wherever, what day, where it's going to be. But I don't think Turkey and them would spite the British fans and spite Eddie and them
the
just
sport.
To make a point.
It's spite to the sport as well.
It's just a slap in the face to everyone involved. It's like, you know, and Fury and Joshua, like, put your foot down here. Like, you guys, yeah. I understand you're making the most money here and you don't want to ruffle any feathers with Turkey, a guy he's lining you guys' pockets. But they have the power to be like, no, guys, what are we doing here?
Fighters care where they fight. It's a big part of the negotiating process. It's a big part of where your fights end up landing. All my big fights were basically in New York. You know, I went to Pacquiao, obviously, in Macau, and then bent over in the UK. And that was great, but being able to fight in my home turf, fighting the Barclays Center, and fighting in the Garden. I fought in the Garden four times. I was undefeated in the Garden. I fought in the Barclays Center. It was the main event four times there. Like, it matters where you fight. And fighters, especially guys like Tyson and AJ, have a lot of power to decide on these kind of things. So I think you're right. I think they should actually step up and be like, we got to give
they
this.
Want it there.
Of course. But I don't know, because AJ had such a good time in Miami. You know, people loved him here. People have always loved Tyson here. We saw him at the White House UFC card over the weekend, and he was like really pumping up being around and enjoying it. So yeah, maybe not. Maybe they both see a reason to be in the States. Or maybe they don't really have a say in it. And I was like, oh, it's going to be in America. You know, Tyson's going to do his thing to sell it over there. But I agree with you. It's just not going to sell the same here at all.
No, there's not as much clamoring for it here. It would do well, and I do think people will travel over, like from the UK. But like asking UK fans to travel over to Vegas in December for a fight that belongs in their backyard, it's just wrong. And yeah. The Netflix.
I mean, they'll do it. They'll do it because they're great fans. They will do it. But also, like, I will be packing my bag, being like, "These son of a bitches!"
Right, right for the holidays too. And yeah. Like, if you want to blame or not blame, but if you want to like pin this on Netflix. This Netflix, like, there's another bunch of comments that I got too. It's like, if it's going to be on at 8 or 11 p.m. Eastern, like here in the States, right? Which Netflix wants. And Netflix has one Friday night type of fights too. The MMA card was on Saturday, but for the most part, they want Friday and they want primetime 11 ish p.m. Eastern, which would be like 4 or 5 in the morning UK time. That's another thing, too. It's like you're asking the majority of the people watching should be from the UK. And you're asking them to get up, you know, crack of dawn, 4 or 5 in the morning, middle of the night to watch this fight. Whereas if it was in UK and it was streaming on Netflix, you're looking at a 5 p.m. start Eastern time, which would be prime time in the UK.
So it comes down to all bad for the UK fans. All bad in every way.
Well, perfect for them is just having it there, yeah. Primetime there, Wembley there, and having us in the U.S. figure it out earlier. Like we always do.
Yeah.
We're not the main drivers of this, you know? It's up to Netflix because
you know, I personally love the Saturday afternoon UK shows, so I'm good with that.
Yeah, I actually prefer those. But, you know, the Fury-Makhmudov fight didn't do that well on Netflix comparative to some of the other Netflix fights, but it was also Makhmudov, wasn't a huge fight. I don't know. We'll see one thing about Turkey is he does listen to fans. You know, they had all those crazy concerts at the beginning and they kind of phased those out. And, you know, the cards was too long and he's kind of he does listen to the feedback. And
yes.
I think there's an overwhelming feedback is that this fight belongs somewhere in the UK. If they do two fights, do the second one in Vegas because that's another thing I got too. Oh, they'll do, you know, first fight Vegas, second fight Wembley. Like, it's been 10 years to get one fight. There's no doubt we get the second one. And it should be first fight Wembley, second fight wherever at that point. You know?
That's possible. It's a thought, but also they're both British. So, like, it's not like, oh, we're going to fight in your backyard, then we're going to go fight in my backyard. It's like, oh, we'll do UK, then we'll do Vegas. Nah, they're both British. Yes, they're huge, and they're you know, they're globally known, but I think if they fight, they should fight in Wembley both times, three times. If they fight three times, they should all be there. Like you're missing out on that gate and you're missing out on that fan base. Shoot. Like I would rather take the trip to go to see that fight in Wembley than have the ease of being able to go to Vegas and watch it. Because I think that's part of the experience. It's part of the allure of that fight. And like you said, this is not guys who are fighting for the world title. This is not guys fighting for a number one spot. These are guys who are fighting each other because we as fans want them to fight and always have. And it's a bit of a nostalgia fight, even though they're both still relatively young compared to, you know, what you would think of for nostalgias. And Wembley's part of that. I truly believe that.
Yeah. That's the part that makes this so boxing.
Is yeah.
A fight that we should have happened 10 years ago. A fight that now, like, people want it, but it's not, like, a top any of your wish lists is now, it's almost like a pawn now, this fight. It's now being taken into the hands of Turkey, Dana, Eddie White, Frank Warren, what network it's going to be on. I want to promote this. No, I'm going to promote it. Look what we can do. All for a fight that we don't necessarily have to see. That's what makes this really, like, a sour taste in your mouth. And now, you know, it's just not great.
But also, though, they said this is like so boxing. It so is because the powers that be don't care about the people. They don't care about the sport. They don't care about they care about personal stuff, ego stuff, to try and push an agenda or a narrative rather than actually doing something that will actually help the sport and be important for the fans themselves. Because we as boxing fans, man, we're like the abused girlfriend. We just keep coming back. We make excuses. You know, like we don't care. We just get beat up and we keep coming back for more. It's sad, but
it's true.
It's the life of being a boxing fan.
Because now I want to actually see, I want to see it more now. Now that like it's kind of being dangled, sadly, like I'm like, all right, figure it out. Now, like if it has to be in Vegas, obviously we're all gonna watch. But I need that 100,000 at Wembley. I need that crowd roaring. I need that scene over there. That's where this fight belongs, man. Fight that will happen, and we know where it's happening. Brooklyn, New York. It is Zayas Boots Fight Week. A big one. Unified, 154 pounds. And I don't necessarily want to make this the predominant theme here, but I feel like this fight got when it got announced. What did it get announced in, like early April, like mid April? This is the only fight people wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
you think it was before that?
I don't know. I think it was definitely April.
Definitely April. It was beginning of April, mid April, whatever. April, the fight gets announced. It's all anyone wanted to talk about. It was the lead on our show for a while. The storylines is Boots really living up to hype. Is Zayas that guy? And then it kind of went away. And then summer came around. And then World Cup is here. And then some other big fights. And then no real fights at all on the schedule. And like I feel like the fever pitch isn't exactly there just yet. So I think the zone is going to have to ramp it up this week.
The fatigue set in is one, because it was a long, drawn-out process. And it was one of those things where it hits you in the face right away, because it was like, whoa, Zayas is taking a huge risk, and it came out of nowhere. It wasn't like we've been talking about this matchup. You know, we've been talking about Virgil more than Zayas, but Zayas swoops in, takes that win. Everyone's like, oh, wow. Good, you know, props on Zayas. He's taking a crazy tough fight and risking his two titles. This kid's going for it. And Boots is always going to be a talk of the town type guy, because that's just Boots. It's just what he is. The narrative around Boots is that he is that guy. He is he. And but then I think the odds started getting so wide that a little bit of the excitement kind of was falling off, because people hear odds. I think boxing fans especially are more inclined to know odds than I think a lot of other sports, because it's part of the culture. And I think you start seeing those odds get wider and wider, and you start hearing about Boots doing what Boots does in the gyms, and you're like, maybe this fight isn't as good, or just losing a little bit of luster. But I think it'll ramp back up this week.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm excited for it. I mean, the New Yorkers are excited for it. Get through the World Cup crowds. -480, and his favorite. It was 430 last week.
Wider every week. Yeah, every week.
That's on FanDuel.
That's my point.
Ennis to stop was method of victory. Ennis to stop +250. No, sorry, excuse me. -135. So they think it's going to go to the decision. Ennis points is +250 right now on FanDuel. But yeah, I agree with you. March 30th is when the fight got announced. And there was a bit of an element of surprise, because we just didn't simply think a fight like this could get made. We didn't think Zayas would take this fight. The Virgil Ortiz news, we weren't 100% certain on where that was going. And according to Oscar De La Hoya, did an interview with Mannix on that Collazo card this past weekend, which was probably one of the worst cards I've ever seen put on DAZN. But besides that, Oscar did say that he thinks that they're going to be able to come to a resolution, Virgil, and to get him back into the ring. But all that led to like, oh, all right, yeah, this fight is hot. And then like, I would say in like mid or late April, we just kind of stopped talking about it. But it's here. So hey, let the promoters do what they do. Let DAZN do what they do and promote the hell. We're going to promote our fight party and all that. But I think the main thing here, some like quick storylines. Next episode, we'll have like much deeper analysis and picks and all that. I just think a star is going to be born Saturday night, one way or another. Either Boots is going to become unified champ at 154 and his best win, or Zayas is like, I'm really that guy. I'm 23 years old. I just beat the boogeyman of boxing. I'm a Puerto Rican star with a great smile, and I'm about to take over this sport. That, to me, is probably the biggest storyline here.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and I said that when this fight first got announced, if Zayas wins this, boom, right into star status, because he's got all the things. And now if you're beating boogeymen, like also, oof, you are that guy. And listen, boxing always needs a Puerto Rican star. Always. And especially doing it in New York. This is a very calculated gamble. You know, these guys are extremely confident. They think they got the juice. They think they know how to beat all these guys. I've been around Xander. I've been in fighter meetings with him. He wants Fedora. He wants Boot. He wants everybody. He wants all the baddest guys. So I got to tip my hat to the kid for that, because they do believe in their skills and they go for it. And then with Boots, Boots gets this win. He gets those two belts. He just lives up to all the talk. Everybody talks about Boots. He is that boogeyman. He is that guy. Then he's got the hardware to go with it. And he's in that deep division with so many guys for him to fight. I'm getting excited just talking about it. Either direction, this is going to be a big deal on Sunday morning.
Yeah, for sure. You say boxing needs a Puerto Rican star. I think boxing needs a black star too.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, those are
a Northeast guy. 100%.
Yeah, like a Philly Northeast guy that could potentially fill up the Barclays Center time and time again. You know, take it obviously on the road to Vegas for the bigger fights, but have that home base. And we put out a video last week, a little quip, and you were talking about Boots busting up faces, and it got a lot of traction on social, having those great sparring moments. And that's the thing with Boots. It's hilarious to see, because we had the accusations of being pro-Zayas and being negative towards Boots. We put out that clip about – yeah, anti-Boots. We put out that clip of you talking about how Boots is roughing up people in sparring. And the comments were like, oh, yeah, but against two. Like, sparring partners are supposed to get beat up. These guys are so pro-Boots. I'm like, oh, my God, this is absolutely hilarious. It's out of control.
You cannot win as a boxing pundit. It doesn't matter. Whatever way the wind blows is the way that these people
got. It's unreal at this point. Like, we're right in the middle. Okay, guys? Like, either whoever wins, we're going to have pretty much a pound-for-pound discussion, a face of boxing discussion. We're going to have unification discussions. That's why we love this fight. That's why this fight means so much. And I'm looking online and I saw a pretty interesting theory thrown out there or point where is, like, when it comes to Boots' resume, like, not the most star-studded resume, we know why. Like, guys avoided him. You know, he had a lot of start and stops to his career with managers and networks, all the bad parts of boxing. But would you say Barao, Zayas beating Barao is better than any win that Boots has?
Stanionis was a good win, especially the way he did it. But Stanionis has struggled before as well. He's been in some, you know, tough close fights. He hasn't done anything since. So that hurts his standing as well.
Barao's also didn't tough. Have much going on before that, Stanionis. He had a very long layoff.
Exactly.
Heading into that fight.
It was also at welterweight. So, Zayas' best win is in the weight class that they are competing in now. And it was a title fight. I'm trying to think who else on, Boots' record.
He had the Lipinets win, but like when before Lipinets, yeah, Lipinets like started the downhill turn.
Mm-hmm. Lipinets, former world champion, 140-pounder, had some good wins at welterweight, but, had some bad losses too. The Chujgatsian fight, which is looking even worse in the rear view, he just got stopped.
He did. I didn't even keep up with that. Another thing too with the Karen and, Boots has never faced someone that could move as much as Zayas. That
yes.
discussion. Zayas is a mover. He's got world-class stamina, his legs. That's just part of his game, Zayas. I honestly think the first four or five rounds are going to be really interesting and really tough for Boots, because I think Zayas is going to be moving like crazy in there. But I brought up the punch stats against Karen. I know the punch stats aren't the end-all be-all, but they do tell a story. 177 punches landed on Karen in the first fight. 211 punches landed in the first fight. 177 landed in the second fight. That's a pretty good amount of punches landed against a quote unquote mover in Karen. Would you say who Karen moves a lot?
He did in that one fight. Yeah, he did move a lot in that fight. And that's good. So even a moving target, Boots is able to find. But you question a little bit about the power though, because a different weight class. Because if they went 24 rounds together, Chujgatsian got hit a lot. Those are a lot of landed blows to get hit with a guy that everyone talks about is this vicious puncher. So you go into question there. And we're in a new weight class. Does weight class help Boots? Does he hit harder? From what I hear, that's what I hear. But we got to see it on fight night.
Hear a lot of things about Boots.
Hear lots of banter about boots out
That's
there.
That's what I mean. Like, one, either way, I'm going to be pretty satisfied as a fan. I'm like, Greg, Boots is that guy. If he can stop Xander.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are picking stop late stoppage for Boots. Like, well, okay. Like, things we have heard are true. Like, this guy, you put anyone in front of him, he's going to beat them pretty either, you know, unanimous decision or stop them. And with Zayas, if he comes out on top, this is an unbelievable win.
Yeah.
It's one of the best wins in the last couple of years.
Barao would be a very good, not practice, but like
litmus test.
Dealing with the pressure of a guy like Barao who's going to come forward constantly, and you got to weather the storm and get to the end. There's going to be parts of that I think we're going to see in this fight where you're going to have to weather a storm and you have to get through some hellacious shots. Because that's the thing about Boots, man. He's a momentum guy. He starts finding momentum and getting off downhill on you. Ooh, it's downhill from there. Very, very, very downhill. So you got to get through those moments.
Absolutely. He beat Lipinets in 2021, Delorme, Castillo, Clayton, Karen once, Roman Villa, a Venetian, Karen again, Stanionis. Man, it's not a murderer's row. And it's not because of him. I mean, you got to put a little blame on the fighter, but like, if you've been following along, bad management, chasing, what's his name? Chasing Crawford.
Yeah.
That situation.
Spent a lot of time, losing a lot of time doing that.
Still only 28. 28 years old.
Physical prime.
Because he got a really early start. Still only 28. It's a 28-year-old versus a 23-year-old. We never see that in this sport.
Never see that. Love that. Oh, for titles, too. And it's for titles. It's for two.
For titles. And there's so much on the line. And, like, it has everything. Like, the prime versus prime, unification, and then potential huge fights after. Where on Sunday's episode, we're like, okay, like, what's the list now? You know, are we looking at Boots versus Fundora? Are we looking at Zayas versus Fundora? Virgil back in the mix? Josh Kelly? Who are some of the other names at 154? I mean, it's crazy the amount of fighters at that weight class. Or, you know, if Zayas wins, there's discussion about him going to 160. And then you spoke about last week how Ennis is, you know, his peak is probably 168.
That's self-reporting. That's what he said. So could be even more.
What do you mean, higher than 168?
Yeah.
What?
I think both of those guys could be.
Jerron Ennis, light heavyweight?
I think we can definitely see Xander as a light heavyweight. He's got the frame for it. He's tall. He's huge.
Wide guys, shoulder. Come out to our fight party. McMahon's Public House. Buy tickets. Hang out with us. The undercard's really good, too. Ben Whitaker making his stateside debut against Richie Popeye the Sailor Man Rivera, who
the
beat
star
Hot
boxing
Rod.
Guy. It's a star boxing guy.
Yeah, he beat Hot Rod a few years ago. Gave some other fighters fits at 175. Having a great camp for everything I see.
He had a tough fight with Badu Jack. Didn't he have a draw with Badu Jack or something like that?
He's legit. This is a very good piece of matchmaking here.
Yeah, that's no American cupcake over here for Ben Whitaker.
It wasn't like on the list of fighters that we were like, I think we put together a list of guys that we would like to see Whitaker in there. And obviously, Richie Rivera fell through the cracks a little bit, but that's not because we don't think much of him, but he's 27-2 with 20 knockouts. He has lost. He had a loss to Tejada in 2024, which is not great. He lost to Badu Jack, but it was
right, very, very close.
Yeah. Where's the Hot Rod? He beat Hot Rod a few years ago. Isn't that his big
win? Really? No.
I thought he had that big win. What's the fight he got absolutely? He didn't beat Hot Rod. He had a fight where he got absolutely hosed in Saudi. Was it the Badu Jack one?
That was Badu Jack. Yeah, Badu Jack, 100%.
But that was at Cruiser.
Yes.
All right, so he's coming down. Wait. This is at 175, I think. I mean, Whitaker has fought at 182, mixed up his own weights.
Yeah, but that wasn't his fault. That was because it was the last one replacement of his opponent.
True. Emiliano Vargas, Bryce Mills. I'm excited to see Emiliano.
Hey, that's not a bad fight. Bryce Mills has been actually, he's gotten a lot better. I've called a lot of his fights for Top Rank Undercards. He's a super popular guy up north.
Yeah, I called his last fight in Turning Stone.
Yeah, he fights up in Turning Stone all the time.
Bro, it was packed in there. There was
he sells tickets, man. He moves them.
I don't know. They'll be there. There'll be a big contingent of Bryce Mills fans. And I love the fact that he called out Vargas afterwards And I remember I was calling the fight with Justin Goosen, and we kind of were like, really? Like, you're never gonna get Emiliano Vargas. You got him. I think this is good for Vargas to be on a card of this big, because like, we have to start showcasing these younger talent, because there's a big gap between the stars now and like what's coming up the pipeline. Vargas is one of them. Dilla Mason is fighting on 4th of July.
Yeah, he's another Mason's guy. Mason's a world champion, though. That's a big difference.
Yeah, he's
way ahead of where Emiliano is. Emiliano's in. I think he's right on time where he's fighting. You got to have that other prospect versus prospect battle. We all have that fight in our career. Like, I had my Jose Peralta fight on NBC. Like, there was like two guys that like really like, whoever wins is going to go for the other, and the other one is either going to fall off the map completely or have to completely start over. This is one of those fights where you assume Vargas is going to win this fight, but Bryce Mills understands that this is his shot. He called for the kid, so he obviously knows. But this is that classic prospect versus prospect crossroads fight.
Yep. So that's we'll be going down on Saturday. Thursday's episode, we will have full breakdowns, picks, predictions, Chris's categories, all that and above. You see, this fight got announced over the weekend. Moses Atalma is stepping it up against Filip Hrgović, August 28th. Big fight. This is a major step up for Atalma.
Big step up. You're jumping a few stages if you're Moses Atalma going into a Filip Hrgović fight, who has one loss, people. One loss. The guy can punch. He's big. He's mean. This is a massive step up. I do still favor Atalma because I think he's that good and I think he's ready for everything. But this is one of those fights where if you're on team Atalma, I think you're kind of being like, this is going to be an interesting night.
Yeah, the odds are not out yet on FanDuel. I would expect Atalma to open up as a favorite 2-1 maybe because of his all-world talent. Hrgović has the one loss to Dubois. Best win was Zhang. Was more of a, I wouldn't say like a boogeyman, but like, he just looks the part.
He fancied himself a boogeyman.
Yes.
I don't think he was really marketed. Yeah, I don't think he was really thought of one.
They marketed him. He looks scary. And he was knocking dudes out coming up the ranks. And people were like, oh, no one wants to fight Hrgović. Or his management put out that narrative. He beat Zhang, which was a good win. And then the Dubois one.
I called that fight live.
It's a good fight. Zhang's a good win. It's a quality win for Hrgović. And at that point, still, Hrgović was looked at as a top contender. And he still kind of is in heavyweight world where he beats Atalma. He's more than back on the scene.
Yeah.
But then the Dubois loss was a little eye-opening because, Dubois was coming off of several losses and kind of refiguring out things and the whole bullying. He tried to bully Dubois, ends up getting bullied in the ring, bad cuts and all that. But Hrgović is
rough night. Very rough.
Rough night at the office for sure. This is a huge one. This is a big one. And this is part of like, I think we put out like three fighters that I wanted to see Atalma in there next with. It was Hrgović, it was Zhang, or it was Bacoli.
Yeah.
And we do this list all the time. We make lists and we have our grand what we think how the sports should go. And very rarely does it actually happen. Like, is part of you a little shocked that Atalma is taking on a challenge like Hrgović right now?
Yes. Yes. This is a questionable pick. This is one of those, like, is this a bridge too far? It's a very, very tough fight. Hrgović is still fresh enough. He's only 34, which at heavyweight is not old. And he's a dangerous guy. He's a puncher. And he's big. It's a very dangerous fight. Again, I think Atalma is good and ready for this kind of opportunity, but I think we still have a lot of questions about Atalma because we haven't seen him really pushed. We haven't seen him come through adversity. We haven't seen him have to overcome resistance because even Franklin, who we thought was going to offer something, offered very little, came in very overweight and just got beat up and dropped and stopped, which was a big deal. Good feather in the cap for Atalma because no one's ever stopped him. But how many answers did we really get that night? Yeah, he's the goods offensively, absolutely. He looked great, from that southpaw stance, super athletic, big, and the power is real. But he wasn't pushed. I thought we were going to see that. I thought we were going to have to see him overcome the hand speed, the combination punching of Franklin, but we didn't. So is this the right guy to figure out if the resistance is there? I don't know. It's a dangerous fight.
I want to see some resistance.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see. I want to see resistance. I want to see some adversity. And the other flip side of things, if a Talmud just runs right through Hrvic, and that's a good thing too.
That's a good thing.
Then we're really hyping this guy. Now we're like, okay, bring on Usyk. Bring on the Wardley Dubois winner if they're going to fight again. Like, bring on, like, sky's the limit. If he goes through Hrvic like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, because then he is world class already. That's right. The thing. If you do that to Ergovic, because Ergovic is world class. If you do that to Ergovic, yeah, you're ready.
But for the longevity of the sport, because that's what we root for here on Inside Boxing, the health of the sport, I want Atama for the next 10 years to be that guy.
Yeah.
So we can talk about him over and over. I want to see some adversity. I want to see some, all right, he's down like 3-1 in the fourth, or like midway through, he's got a little bit of a cut. Got roughed up a little bit, had to hold Hrgović. Then Cruz, maybe get a late stoppage. That'd be like perfect.
Dan stands right in the script. I'm going to send that
over to Frank Warren. Another thing too, Frank Warren, we speak very highly of him here on this show, knows what he's doing here. He is not going to put his this is like you have the golden ticket in your hand with Moses Atama. You have 10 years of stadium fights ahead of you, at least 10 years. He knows. He knows. He thinks that Atama can handle Hrgović.
No, absolutely. I think, and that's what I meant by the team of Hrgović looking around him. They obviously understand what they have in front of them, because this is a dangerous step, but they believe in their guy. And to your point, Frank Warren knows what the hell he's doing. He's been doing this a very long time, and he's very good at it. And he's not risking this Atama train, man. This thing is going to be going for a long time. Just like you said, I truly believe this is going to be the guy that we're going to be dealing with for the next 10 years.
Wow. And it's August 28th. It's going up again. I'm going to actually be in UK at that time. There's an MVP fight. That's the same night as Chantel Cameron versus Michaela Mayer.
Ooh, good fight. Good fight.
Caroline Dubois also fighting on that card. So I don't know, like,
Friend of the show, Michaela Mayer. She came to our last fight party, for the record.
I was hanging out with her in Orlando last week. We did a whole promotional shoot. She had her, she's been traveling like crazy. MVP has sent her all over the place. And she's got her big, giant brief suitcase. And she comes into the photo shoot and she opens up a suitcase and there's the WBC belt and there's the WBO belt. Mixed in with all our clothes. And I was like, that is just such a boxer thing. That's so cool.
Such a female boxer champion thing.
Yeah. And I just put that belt on immediately because I was like, damn, that green belt is, I think it's sturdy.
Sweet. I mean, they all are. They're all heavy.
You got it over there? Flexing on us? I had the replica WWE one. That one was sick.
Yeah, this is the mini.
Oh, wow. Look at that one.
The mini WBC.
I remember, speaking of that one, it was Mayweather-Pacquiao pre-fight party. I get in, and Vern Troyer, a.k.a. Mini-Me, has one of those around his neck. He's on his motorized cart. It's the first thing I saw. I walked in the door of the party. I'm like, all right, Pacquiao-Mayweather party. I've been dreaming of this party for 10 years. Door opens. First thing I see is Mini-Me, WBC belt wrapped around his neck in a motorized cart.
Did you think someone's, like, put acid in your drink? Like that would be flip out. Like, what is this?
Then I looked to my right and Denzel Washington. If you go back and look up Denzel Mayweather Pacquiao, he was wearing like this full unk tracksuit, Yankee hat, and he's sitting on a couch. But the way he's laying on the couch, it was almost like he was in his living room. Like he was super horizontal. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, what is going on? And no one, I was by myself, so I couldn't even like tell anyone, like, dude, this is crazy. I remember like posted all on Snapchat and stuff, but I don't know where I was going with that. Yeah, August 28th, I'll be in Birmingham, United Kingdom.
Birmingham.
And I'm thinking of sticking around and going to London for a week after.
Back to London town. Why not? London's cool.
I wonder if they're going to keep the 28th MVP. I do work with MVP. I'm not in those discussions. Atama's a pretty big deal. And did they say where it's going to be? I know they have a press conference this week. I saw Keith Connolly is on his way to London to announce the Atama fight because he represents Philip Hrgović, hardest-working boxing manager in the game. Do we have a location yet? No. No location. Oh, wait. Oh, yes. 02.
O2 Arena.
Wait, 29th? Wait a second, 29th. So are you telling me that the MVP fight is on a Friday? This is all happening, folks. Yes! I'm going to go to both. I'm going to go to the Satama fight.
Nice. That's for back-to-back yeah. nights, 28 and 29.
Oh, man. It's because Friday night is the fight for MVP, and then we have nothing to do. We're done after, or no more duties. Hop on a train to London. Dude, I just got so excited.
That's awesome. So that'll be early here. And then after that, we have Lester Martinez over in
Saturday
Atlanta.
Night?
Saturday night.
I'll watch that on my phone.
There you go. And that card. That card is sick. We have Najee Lopez on the card, Ramon Cardenas.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, this is we're rolling out the new $5 a month
plan.
$5 a month subscription. The fights are like the cards are like pay-per-views. It's wild. Yeah.
This is what I want to hear.
Yeah, the cards are like pay-per-views. You know, we got Lester at the top. We got Najee Lopez as the co-feature or the direct co-main, and then Ramon Cardenas is on there. A couple other guys too. It's sick card.
That's awesome. And it's $5 for the month or just for that
for the
card?
Month. So it's $5 a month is a subscription for Pro Box. I know it's a cup of coffee, guys. Like it's
less than coffee. My coffees cost more than that.
You're New York City. My Boca tax. I still get my coffees for like $4.67, something nice. Like that.
Under yeah. five is good. That's great though. Look at that health of boxing. We have a major heavyweight fight. We have a women's card in the UK, and then we have I wouldn't even say club level.
Like, no, we've grown now.
Showbox level.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. Or like good a fights. Boxing After Dark, like a HBO bad.
Those were the
level.
Best.
Yeah, they were.
Gotti Ward was a bad. DAD.
Yep.
They had such cool merch. I remember my dad. When Boxing After Dark first got created, it was created by Lou DiBella, good friend of my dad's. And they send over the merch for it, and it was bad. Badass. BAD. BAD. And it was like leather jackets, black hats, like the moon.
HBO merch was always the
There's
best.
Something in my basement and like in a bag. They had the moon. With the two fighters in the middle, and it said Boxing
yeah,
After Dark.
Yeah, that's right, the moon. That's yep. Fuck.
That is yep. just 90s right there, 90s branding.
The duffel bags that I have, those HBO duffel bags, calendars with my fights on it. That's pretty cool.
That's yeah, badass. The yeah, calendar with your fight, because we got the calendars every year for HBO would send them to the house, and like it would yeah. be like.
They sent gifts for Christmas. Like they were such a cool company.
Yeah, they were the best. The budgets for HBO were absurd. Like the pre-fight dinners were nuts. I remember running to like Shaq and like Wahlberg and the Sopranos cast. I'll never forget meeting Paulie Walnuts and AC, Tony Sirico, who's legitimately the same guy. What would you say?
Yeah, where else would you meet him?
Right.
It's gotta be
it
AC.
It was the most authentic celebrity meetup I've ever had. And I've been lucky enough to have a bunch of them. He was the same exact person. Like Tony Sirico is Paulie Walnuts and
most
vice versa.
Actors I've met aren't acting. They're just being that guy. They're
yeah, but he was never really an actor. He was a guy that was did a time. Like
yeah.
Could have been in the mafia, I feel like, if he really put his heart to it when he was younger. So the dinner's happening, and these dinners are all paid for. The dinner ends and he takes out a wad of cash and he's trying to pay for the meal. And the waitresses and like the HBO people are like, oh, Mr. Sirico, it's paid for. And he's got a wad. He's like, no. He's like dishing out hundreds. He's grabbing my brother by the cheek and he's doing the old, and we got a picture with him. And it's, oh, man, God bless. God rest his soul. Tony Sirico, HBO days. All right. Yeah, I'm excited, man. I just thought it was going to be the same night. So Friday night MVP in Birmingham, Saturday night, Atalma. Hergovic, who do I got to hit up to get tickets?
This is O2.
Frank Connor. Warren. I mean, I'll just send them every nice thing we've said about him on this show.
Yeah, we do.
It's like the only promoter we like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Bob. I don't think we never said anything bad about Bob.
No, I like Bob. No, Bob. I like all the promoters. Come on.
Yeah.
I like them all. I like them all. But Frank, he operates different.
He's different. He moves different.
I want to shake that man's hand. I want to freaking interview him. I want to ask him like a quick hitters type of thing. All right, everyone. That's exciting news. We'll be back on Thursday with our official preview for Boots versus Zayas. It's Zayas Boots. I keep saying Boots Zayas. It's Zayas.
Yeah, Zayas is the champion. He is the defending champ.
Let's show some respect here. For how long remains to be seen. I'm excited about that. We're going to get more information. I'm going to call the McMahon owner and get everything locked down. Everything is locked down, but just, you know, reiterate. Saturday, McMahon's Public House. Join us. Tickets right now. Get you a beer. $20 to hang out with your boxing friends and a beer. It's a perfect beginning to what should be a legendary night.
Yeah, it's a boxing social event, community style.
Are we going into the fight?
Very possibly not.
Very possibly not. We have not put out any email. I haven't emailed anyone to get a credential. I think that's going to be the next thing. Right after we say goodbye here, I'm going to get a credential. So
we have the option.
But they don't like when you don't show up.
Mm.
I did that a few times with Top Rank, and I got some nasty emails. You know what, Dan? You said you were coming, and you didn't show up, and that could have been a spot for someone else. I said, you're right. That is
wow.
So I'm sorry.
You know what? That
I got yelled at. I got yelled at. And it's right, because
you're right.
That's premium, that's premium real estate around ringside. You know? And they give you your name and with your stuff. And so we got to figure that out. We'll figure that out offline. Anything else, Chris?
No. All good. All good.
All right. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourself at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Buy tickets to our event. See you in Brooklyn.